Prabhupada ki jai, Shri Bhakti Vedanta ki jai, Dhritta Raj, Shri Mad Bhagavatam ki jai, Jai Jai Shri Giri Raj, Maharaj ki jai, Jai Nitai Go Premanandi. Okay, so tonight we'll continue with chapter 3. Let's see where we're up to. Tonight, start with verse 34. And we'll go verse 34 to 47. Then tomorrow night we'll finish chapter 3, and that will be it for this year. So, okay. So, verse number 34. King Nimi inquired, "Please explain to me the transcendental situation of the Supreme Lord, Narayana, who is himself the absolute truth and the supersoul of everyone. You can explain this to me because you are all most expert in transcendental knowledge." Atish, you want to read the first paragraph? Yeah.
According to Srila Jiva Swami, in the previous verse, the sages informed the king, Narayana, simply by unalloyed devotion to Lord Narayana, one can very easily cross over the ocean of material illusion. Therefore, in this verse, the king is requesting specific information about the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is significant in this verse that the king refers to the Supreme Lord as Narayan, Brahman and Paramatma. Although King Nimi is already understood to be a devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by his question, he wants to verify that the Personality of Godhead is the highest transcendental truth. In the Bhagavatam 1-11, Vadanti Tattvavidas Tattvam Yajnam Advayam Brahmeti Paramatmeti Bhagavan iti Shabdete. Learned transcendentalists who know the absolute truth call this non-dual substance Brahman, Paramatma or Bhagavan. Therefore, it is to be understood that the word Narayana in this verse refers to the Bhagavan feature of the Supreme Lord in the spiritual world.
Okay. So, what are the points? So this is the fifth question which is asked. There are a number of questions which are asked. If you go back to earlier in the chapter, it discusses there are various questions which will be asked at this point. So this is the fifth question. So what is the question? Technically it is, what is the true identity of Brahman? Brahman means the Supreme Absolute Truth. So what is the actual identity of that personality? What are the characteristics of the personality? Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur also describes this question as, how can one develop perfect faith in the Supreme? So this is the way the question can also be interpreted. How do we develop perfect faith in the Supreme Object? So this will be discussed. The purports are very long in this section. It's very philosophical, this portion. If you read through the paragraphs, if you read through the purport of this verse, the basic premise is that the absolute truth is divided into different phases, which the Bhagavatam described early on. Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavaniji Shabdite. So this is the absolute truth. Srila Prabhupada explains in the introduction to the Srimad Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam does not deal with God. Right? It deals with the absolute truth. You know, because the absolute truth has many phases. If you understand that Krishna is supreme, but you don't understand his relationship with Brahman and Paramatma, then you don't have the absolute truth. And that's what happens in so many of the religions and philosophies in the world. They discuss God, but they don't understand how everything relates properly. Only the Bhagavatam explains how everything relates completely and perfectly. So, Brahman is his effulgence. Right? We always see pictures of Krishna. He always has the Brahma Jyoti around him. So that is his effulgence. There's never... Krishna does not exist without the Brahma Jyoti. Right? He always has an effulgence around him. That is Brahma Jyoti. That is his Shakti, which is emanating from him. There's no such thing as Krishna without the Brahma Jyoti. You don't see pictures of Krishna without that effulgence. Just like in Vrindavan, sometimes Krishna goes into the houses of the gopis and he steals. Right? And then they come to Mother Yashoda and they complain. They say that he steals from our houses. Mother Yashoda said, how can he steal? He goes into the middle of the house, which is where they keep all the cool room in the middle of the house. They don't have refrigeration like we do. So he goes in, it's all dark. I say, how can he steal? He can't even see. And I say, no, your son, there's a light coming from him. And he is effulgent, like a devata. So there's no such thing as Krishna without the Brahma Jyoti. You can't have one without the other. Krishna always has Brahma Jyoti. It is always. So, according to the Bhagavatam, and this is where many people in India are confused, in the West also, but people are confused. What is supreme? They think Brahman is supreme, right? And they explain that from Brahman comes Bhagavan, or Paramatma, even. But Brahman is supreme. No, the Bhagavatam does not describe like that. It's the opposite. Bhagavan is supreme and the effulgence comes from him. That is logical. That is the correct way to understand the absolute truth. So the absolute truth has three phases, but within the three phases, we have to understand how everything relates properly and how everything relates correctly. If you don't understand this, then you don't understand this. So that's the basic gist of the purport. The purports are very long in this section, so there's pages and pages. That's the gist. So. Any points?
So this Brahman effulgence around Krishna should be all around his body. In the pictures, they only show around the head. It should be all around the body. So pictures are not really accurate when they show only around the head.
Any other points? It says in the Shastra, even Krishna's toenails are effulgent. Everything is effulgent. Okay. So this is the question. Now, this question will be answered up until text number 40. Sri Pipalayana said, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the cause of the creation, maintenance, and destruction of this universe. Yet, he has no prior cause. He pervades the various states of wakefulness, dreaming and unconscious sleep, deep sleep, and also exists beyond them. By entering the body of every living being as the super soul, he enlivens the body's senses, life airs, and mental activities. And thus, all the subtle and gross organs of the body begin their functions. My dear King, know that the personality of Godhead to be supreme. Yuro, would you like to read the first part?
In the previous verse, King Nimi inquired about various absolute truths, namely Narayan, Brahman, and Paramatma. Now, the sage Sri Pipalayana explained these three pieces of absolute truth in the same order in which the king mentioned them. Siddhi, Uddhava, Pralaya, Hetu refers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who expands himself as the triple Purusha incarnation, Mahavishnu, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, and Shirodakshaya Vishnu. As described in Bhagavatam 1.3.1, in the beginning of the creation, the Lord first expanded himself in the universal form of Purusha incarnation and manifested all the ingredients for the material creation. And thus, at first, there was a creation of the 16th principle of material action. This was for the purpose of creating the material universe. Thus, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Narayan is mentioned here as Hetu, or the supreme cause of the creation, maintenance and inhalation of cosmic situation. Still, there is no cause of the Lord Himself. He is Ahetuha, as expressed in the Brahma Samhita, Anadir Adir Govinda Sarva Karanam. The Supreme Lord is the cause of all causes, and being the eternal absolute truth, He has no cause of Himself. The word Ahetu has also been explained by Srila Jiva Goswami to indicate that the Supreme Lord has His original form as Krishna in His own transcendental abode called Krishna Loka. Since Krishna is always engaged in His blissful pastime in the company of His eternally liberated associates, He is aloof from the affair of this world, which is created by His external identity known as Maya. Therefore it is stated, Jagre Purusham Rupam, the Lord expands Himself as Narayana and Vishnu to facilitate the gross illusion and gradual rectification of the conditioned souls. The Lord's aloofness from the material creation is also described in Vedas, Na tasya karyam karanam cha vidyate. The Absolute Truth has nothing to do since everything is done self-sufficiently by His multipotencies. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has pointed out that even though the Supreme Lord Krishna is Ahetu or causeless and aloof from the cause of material creation, the Lord is also described in this verse as Hetu, or the ultimate cause of creation, maintenance and annihilation of material manifestation. Because He expands Himself as Paramatma or the Super Soul, who acts as the prime mover of the cosmic manifestation.
Okay. So what are the points? So Krishna is known as Ahetu. What does that mean?
He has no cause.
No cause. Very good. Yeah. So this is Krishna's position. He is Sarva Karana.
Karanam.
Karana means?
Cause.
Cause.
Same as Hetu. Cause. He is the cause of everything. But by definition, he cannot have a cause. That is the definition of Bhagavan or God. He must be causeless. Right? If there's a cause to him, then he is not God. Then something is superior. So Krishna is causeless. So how is that possible? How can something be without a cause? We see everything has a cause. There's no such thing as something which is causeless, except for Krishna. He himself is causeless. So how is that possible? That is called achintya shakti. You are the cause of everything, yet you have no cause. How can that be? That is just the way it is. Right? It is beyond perception. Logic only goes so far when you deal with Krishna. Your intelligence only goes so far when you deal with Krishna. The intelligence is limited. You can only understand so much when you're dealing with God, with Krishna. Right? As my guru explained, you get to a point, you just fold your hands and you say you are whatever you are. Right? And you just bow and you serve. That's it. Because he's beyond perception. So it explains here, why does he create the material world? Because all of us need it. We want to be separate from him. Therefore, he creates the material world. Otherwise, there is no need for the material world. Right? It is just for the purpose of facilitating the illusion of the living entity. The living entity is trying to imitate Krishna. Krishna says, there, go. Have something to experience in. Chetra. Chetra and Chetra Gya. 13th chapter of Gita explains that we are the Chetra Gya and this is the
Chetra.
Yeah. So that's all it is. It's just a place and we're trying to experience that place. And when we become frustrated, we become introverted. This is explained in the Harinam Chintamani by Haridas Thakur. When we become When we suffer sufficiently, then we become introverted, introspective, and then we take to devotional service. Otherwise, all the living entities, they're trying to enjoy separate from Krishna. But you get to a point where you become frustrated, and then you go back towards Krishna. So that's what's happening now. We're trying to get back to Krishna. Any points?
Says promotes a gradual rectification of the conditioned souls.
Yeah.
Rectification.
Yeah.
Although we want to be separate from Krishna, we can't be because he treats us as Paramatma. So we can't be separate from him.
Yeah. Gyanam smritir apohanam cha. So Krishna gives you knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. So even though our super soul is right here, right now, with us, but we forget Krishna's existence. Any other point? Okay. Text 36. Neither the mind nor the faculties of speech, sight, intelligence, the life air, or any of the senses are capable of penetrating that supreme truth, any more than small sparks can affect the original fire from which they are generated. Not even the authoritative language of the Vedas can perfectly describe the supreme truth, since the Vedas themselves disclaim the possibility that the truth can be expressed by words. But through indirect reference, the Vedic sound does serve as evidence of the supreme truth, since without the existence of that supreme truth, the various restrictions found in the Vedas would have no ultimate purpose. Okay, so. Raj, you want to read the first paragraph?
The smallest sparks generated by blazing fire have no power to illuminate the original fire, nor can they burn it. The quantity of heat and light in the original fire is always superior to the quantity found in the insignificant sparks. Similarly, the minute living entity is generated from the internal potential of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as stated in the Vedanta Sutra, Janvar Asya Yatha, and Bhagavad Gita, Aham Sarvasya Prabhava, Mamaivamso Jiva Loke, Jiva Bhuta Sanatana. The minute living entities, being, amsha, are sparks of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, can never equal the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the quantity of their potency. The quality of knowledge and bliss in the Supreme Personality of Godhead is always superior. Therefore, when a fully conditioned soul tries to illuminate the subject matter of the highest truth with his tiny brain, he merely illuminates his own foolishness. The Personality of Godhead has personally spoken Bhagavad Gita, which is the blazing fire of perfect knowledge that burns to ashes the insignificant speculations and theories of so-called philosophers and scientists regarding the ultimate truth.
Any points? So in the purport, the very long purport, this one, first 6-7 pages, so it describes that one can only understand the absolute truth with purified senses. If your senses are not pure, you won't understand Krishna. Even you go before the deity in the temple, you'll only perceive the deity, you'll only perceive Krishna's presence within the deity if your senses are purified. If your senses are not pure, you will not perceive Krishna. So, interesting point which is made in the purport. The absolute truth cannot be understood with the mind. It's an interesting point. The mind will not have the potency to understand the absolute truth. But it describes that the absolute truth can be understood by the intelligence. But the intelligence must be gifted with Kripa Shakti. Kripa Shakti means? Yeah, you need to be purified by mercy of a higher personality. In other words, you must hear, it says, with concentrated intelligence. If you are sincerely searching, just like right now, if we're sincerely reading the Bhagavad Gita, and we're sincerely trying to understand the absolute truth, right, then Krishna can reveal himself through the pages of the Bhagavad Gita. Right? Otherwise, it's not possible to understand. Right? It's the subject matter is beyond perception of the senses. Right? It is said that Krishna is adhoksaja. Adhoksaja means?
Beyond perception.
Right? But you can understand Krishna, but you have to hear with the right attitude. Then Krishna can reveal himself through the process of hearing. So that is the whole process of understanding the absolute truth. Right? By hearing about Krishna, then you can understand the absolute truth. Right? If your service attitude is correct. Right? Therefore it says in the Gita, Tadvidi Pranipatena. Hari Prashnina Sevaya. Sevaya means one must have a service attitude. Right? Because if you have a service attitude and you are hearing the Bhagavatam while you have a service attitude, then Krishna can manifest. Right? By his transcendental potency, by his kripa shakti, by his mercy, he will reveal himself in your heart. That is the process given in the Gita. The Gita says, Tushyanticha Radamanticha. That verse describes Machchita, Magadha Prana. It describes that you will understand Krishna by hearing about him. Right? And he will reveal himself within the heart. Right? That is the process. Right? And then the next verse says, it is by that hearing process that then you will understand, you'll be given the buddhi yoga, or the ability to perceive Krishna. Right? So that is the whole process. Right? We have to hear properly. When you hear properly, Krishna will manifest. So, any points?
If we hear from a Paramahansa who has got Lord in his heart, it can be easily revealed.
Yeah, if you can find a Paramahamsa.
Because Paramahamsas, they have one, the sex attraction, opposite sex attraction, which is the biggest stumbling block in our progress, spiritual progress.
Yeah, they're a long way above that. So, any other points? Okay. The text 37. Originally one, the absolute truth, Brahman, comes to be known as threefold, manifesting itself as the three modes of material nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance. Brahman further expands its potency, and thus the power to act and the power of consciousness become manifest, along with the false ego, which covers the identity of the conditioned living being. Thus, by the expansion of the multipotencies of the Absolute, the demigods as the embodiment of knowledge become manifest, along with the material senses, their objects and the results of material activity, namely happiness and distress. In this way, the manifestation of the material world takes place as the subtle cause and as the material effect visible in the appearance of gross material objects. Brahman, which is the source of all subtle and gross manifestations, is simultaneously transcendental to them, being absolute. So once again, a very long purport, which is described there. Very long. It's like eight, nine pages. So if you read it, the basic essential element is that it is being established that Krishna is the source of Brahman. Right? There was so much confusion. When Prabhupada went to India, 1970, he went back to India, and then he started traveling around, and he took his dancing white elephants, his disciples, Western disciples. And Prabhupada went, and they did many programs in many places. And sometimes Prabhupada would share the stage with Mayavadis. So Prabhupada would speak, and then they would speak, and there's different occasions. One time Prabhupada, he gave a lecture, and then afterwards some Mayavadi came on and began to speak. Prabhupada listened for a couple of minutes, and then after a couple of minutes he turned to his disciples and said, start kirtan, and drown him out, because he was just speaking impersonalistic philosophy. So then Prabhupada said, start the kirtan. It wasn't even Prabhupada's program. Prabhupada just said, start kirtan. He didn't want to listen to this kind of talk. So Prabhupada was insistent that we preach against impersonalistic philosophy. And Prabhupada was so strong when he would preach against impersonalists. Right? That was his focus, that was his mood. Even his pranam mantra, which he gave us. Right? We have two pranam mantras for Prabhupada. So the first one is his guru's pranam. He just changed Bhakti Siddhanta to Bhakti Vedanta. It's the same mantra. Right? But then the second mantra was written by Prabhupada himself, because the disciples could not write Sanskrit. So he wrote it himself. So it's interesting. He could have written anything. Very interesting pranam that Prabhupada wrote for himself. Namaste Saraswati Devi. So he identifies himself as the servant of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. Right? Gauravani Pracharini. Right? One who is preaching the message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Right? Nirvisesh Shunyavad. Right? Yeah, I know the last part. Right? Nirvisesh. Right? Shunyavad. It's impersonalistic philosophy and Buddhist philosophy, which is basically the same thing. Voidism and impersonalism. Otherwise, denying God's existence, his personality, his form. Right? Paschatya Desha Tarini, which means delivering the Western countries. Right? Another interesting point. Prabhupada wasn't interested in just India. Right. Yeah, he actually was interested in it, because he went back there. And from 70 onwards, he spent 3/4 of his time in India. Right. He'd go around the West once every year for 3 months, but the rest of the time, the other 9 months, he spent in India. His guru gave him the instruction, right, go to the Western countries. But his own desire was to liberate India. But it's the same point. Nirvisesh Shunyavad. That's the problem with the modern world. So he came to destroy impersonalism. And that's what the whole Bhagavad Gita is for. Prabhupada was so insistent that we establish Krishna consciousness. The society was registered as the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. But it's interesting, I was reading the other day, that wasn't the first name he gave to the movement, right? There were other names before ISKCON, right? You remember back in the 50s when he was in Jhansi, right? League of Devotees, right? But then when he came to America, he was playing with the word God consciousness and there were different things he was saying. And then he settled on Krishna consciousness, International Society. That wasn't the first. Yeah, it was something else in the beginning, something for Krishna consciousness. Right? And then he changed it to International Society and then became ISKCON, like that. But then later on, when the devotees went to India with him and they were traveling down south and they were preaching, and Lord Ramachandra is more popular than Krishna in southern India, right? Krishna is more popular in the north, but down south, Lord Ram is more popular. So the devotees wrote to Prabhupada in one letter and they said, Prabhupada, should we emphasize Ramachandra, because everyone down there, they're more interested in Lord Ram. So Ram and Krishna are non-different, so we push on that. Prabhupada said, no, you must establish Krishna as being the original personality. He was emphatic. Right? Has to be Krishna, is emphasized. So that is the Siddhanta, or the conclusion of the Bhagavatam. Right? That Krishna is to Bhagavan Swayam. Right? So all this section is basically pointing towards that. We have to understand Bhagavan is supreme, and amongst the forms of God, Prabhupada says in the Bhagavad Gita, do not divert your attention even to another form. Just stay fixed on Krishna. Right? Don't even divert to another form. Prabhupada writes that. So that's what this section is establishing, Krishna's supreme position. So, any points?
Brahma Samhita also says the same, Nana Dharam Akaro Bhuvaneshu Kintu Krishna
Samhita. Yeah. Because what is the Brahma Samhita? It's a commentary on the Bhagavatam. That's what the Brahma Samhita is. It's a commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam. So everything in the Brahma Samhita is commentary. It's explaining the Bhagavatam. That's what it is. Any other point?
Brahma Samhita originated before Srimad Bhagavatam, right?
You could say in universal history, possibly you could say that, but they both exist eternally. So you see these Shastras, they just manifest, and they become unmanifest, that's all. They always exist. Brahma Samhita is always there. Bhagavatam is always there. Any other point?
The last point what we discussed, right, is it not contradicting all other forms of Krishna?
What's that?
Because Krishna's form is the supreme form. And why are we discussing about all other forms? Because they are there in Bhagavatam.
Because they are
because
they are Krishna's expansions. Anything to do with Krishna is blissful. So they're Krishna's expansions.
Now, what is the destiny of these people? Do they go back to Krishna?
Who?
These devotees, where they pray to Lord Ram or anyone, right? What is their destiny? Mm-hmm. I know there are a lot of different spiritual plans where they go.
Yeah, there's so many plans to choose from. So Ayodhya is in the spiritual world. So if you're attached to Lord Rama, you go and live in the spiritual world of Lord Rama. There's no problem. But Lord Chaitanya emphasized staying, fixing one's consciousness on Krishna. Right? And Prabhupada also emphasized fixing one's consciousness on Krishna.
Then why devotees don't focus on
the question that? Doesn't matter. The question is only what you're going to do. That's all that matters. It doesn't matter. Any devotee can focus on whoever he wants to focus on. Who are you going to focus on? That's the point. The question doesn't matter. If someone's Ram or Nisringa or Krishna, that's their choice. It doesn't matter. They're all devotees. All right. You know the pastime from Lord Chaitanya's pastime. So Murari Gupta. Right? And then Lord Chaitanya said, why are you meditating on Lord Ramachandra? Why don't you worship Krishna? He is the original form. Right? And Murari stayed up all night, he couldn't sleep. And the next day he said, then I will give up my life. And Lord Chaitanya said, actually, you are Hanuman. Yeah? So it doesn't matter, whichever form you, that is perfect. Every devotee is perfect. Every devotee has a different mood, that's their choice. But Prabhupada says to us, you should focus on Krishna. Unless you're a Rambhakta.
On that gradual point, Mahaprabhu told Venkatpat and Lakshmi.
Same
Radha,
thing.
Yeah.
Same thing.
You have to worship Radha Krishna.
Everything was the same. Yeah.
But they all have got the same potency. But some people are attracted more to one form than the
other. You know, Krishna has the most potency.
But Krishna is in.
The most, more than all the others. Mm-hmm. Even the others worship Krishna.
What about that?
We just read in the 10th canto that even Mahavishnu stole the to see Krishna. So Krishna is supreme, even amongst his other forms.
So what is the meaning of that Om Purnamada?
It means that each one of his avatars is complete and he is the most complete. Most perfect, more perfect,
Most perfect.
Most perfect. Any other point? Okay. Brahman, the eternal soul, was never born and will never die, nor does it grow or decay. That spiritual soul is actually the knower of the youth, middle age, and death of the material body. Thus the soul can be understood to be pure consciousness, existing everywhere at all times and never being destroyed. Just as the life air within the body, although one, becomes manifest as many in contact with the various material senses, the one soul appears to assume various material designations in contact with the material body. So the basic principle within the commentary on that verse is that spirit is permanent. The material body is something we misidentify with. That is called maya. Maya means? Yeah, that which is not. So what is your material body? It's maya. Your material body doesn't exist. Because it will disappear in due course of time. So we're identifying with it now, but it's just something which is temporary. It's not. I mean, it's real. The energy is real, but the form is temporary. So we identify with it. We take it too seriously. Material body. Think about all the people that you won't talk to. That's all based on what? Your material body. Because if you understood your spiritual nature, right, then you would see everything differently. Because we identify the material body and the mind, the intelligence and the ego, then, you know, we become so disturbed by the way people act or what they do or what they say. And devotees don't talk to each other for years on end. That is all illusion. That's because we don't understand who we actually are. That's the point.
Not talking is illusion. Is similar to talking also illusion?
What is that?
Not talking is an illusion. So similar to talking is also illusion.
Well, it depends what you talk about. That's all. What we're talking about now is not illusion. If you talk about things which are not important, that's illusion. You can talk about your new watch or your new car or, you know, talk about all those things are illusion. If you talk about the Bhagavatam, that's not illusion.
Depending on the way you're speaking.
Yeah. The spirit soul is born in many different species of life within the material world. Some species are born from eggs, others from embryos, others from seeds of plants and trees, and others from perspiration. But in all species of life, the prana, or vital air, remains unchanging and follows the spirit soul from one body to another. Similarly, the spirit soul is eternally the same despite its material condition of life. We have practical experience of this. When we are absorbed in deep sleep through dreaming, the material senses become inactive, and even the mind and false ego are merged into a dormant condition. But although the senses, mind, and false ego are inactive, one remembers upon waking that he, the soul, was peacefully sleeping. So the basic gist in the commentary and the purport is that we are individuals eternally. You can't lose your individuality. That's the mistake of the Mayavad philosophy. Mayavad philosophy says that you will give up your personality, your individuality. That's not possible. Right? That's a defective philosophy. But the Mayavadis, they preach like that. That the individualism is an illusion. You think you're an individual, that's an illusion. Actually, everything is one, but that's actually illusion. Individuality can never be destroyed. You are who you are. I mean, now we think we're someone that we're not. You know, we think we're Australian or Indian or male or female, but that's illusion, right? Reality is, right, that we are jivarasrupahoi krishnara nichadas. Krishnara tatashta shakti beda beda prakash. Right. That is the teaching of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. You are eternally the servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna. That is reality. So the individuality cannot be taken away. Even when, it says in the Nectar of Devotion, when when Hanuman comes back to Lanka, right, and Lord Ramachandra, he says, take a benediction. Right. And Lord Ramachandra says, what do you want? I'll give you moksha. Right. And then Hanuman says, if that means I lose my individuality and I cannot be your servant, then to me that is like hell. Yeah. It is a hellish benediction. I just want the benediction that I can serve you eternally. That's the mentality of the pure devotee. So you cannot lose your individuality, it's not possible. Jai Hanuman.
How the understanding that we are spirit soul is the most difficult thing to act on that platform. That's the most difficult thing. Because we are covered by the elements of material nature, and so understanding to be spirit soul and act on this platform is very difficult.
Any points?
Can we say that they tend to see the oneness, whereas the Madhvacharya sees the difference, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu combined these two as a Prince philosophy? Because they can see only the oneness, they identify themselves as Brahman and would like to merge. Madhvacharya says that eternally we are different, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu combined these two philosophies into one, that we are one and at the same time different.
Yeah, that is the most perfect explanation. So, very good. Okay. When one seriously engages in the devotional service of the personality of Godhead, fixing the Lord's lotus feet within one's heart as the only goal of life, one can destroy the innumerable impure desires lodged within the heart as a result of one's previous fruitive work within the three modes of material nature. When the heart is thus purified, one can directly perceive both the Supreme Lord and oneself as transcendental entities. Thus one becomes perfect in spiritual understanding through direct experience, just as one can directly experience the sunshine through normal, healthy vision. So if you read through the purport, once again, that's quite a long purport. The basic conclusion is that the goal of life is to become a pure devotee. Because originally all of us were
pure
devotees. So what happened?
We wanted to enjoy ourselves without the Lord.
So why did we do that?
Became envious.
So why did we do that?
Envy.
Originally we were all pure devotees. You have to meditate upon that. You have to contemplate that point. We were pure devotees. So what are we now? That's what's important.
Envy from Krishna.
That's all philosophical, but what I'm saying, what are we now? Analyze very carefully your consciousness.
Condition.
Because your consciousness at this point in time is artificial. Right? It's not natural, and it's not the original consciousness that you had.
Right?
I know all the philosophy, I know all that. I'm trying to make a deep point here, so understand it. Right? Contemplate, because tomorrow is Kartik. It's an opportunity, right, to push ourselves further in devotional service. Some of us started yesterday. I already started Kartik yesterday. We're already 2 days in. Hands up if you started yesterday.
Maybe.
Oh, very good. Okay. So then start tomorrow. That's okay as well.
But how come it is starting tomorrow?
It's a long philosophical debate. It's been going on for hundreds of years. So.
I thought it was today.
I started yesterday, so.
Yeah, but I thought in temple they are starting
today. In temple they're starting tomorrow. The point is just start it. That's the point. I started it yesterday because in my heart it feels like it's Kartik already. So I'm not gonna sit around and wait when it's already happening.
It was a full moon probably.
Yeah, full moon started yesterday. Yeah. Yesterday was Purnima.
Yeah.
It
was
Purnima.
Yeah, it's double Purnima. Today is also Purnima. Both days are Purnima. So. So the point is, regardless, is that push yourself for a month to purify yourself. Become closer once again to being a pure devotee. Because that's what we naturally and originally are. So push yourself to become that once again. Give up the false ego, give up the material attachments, and just focus on being a pure devotee once again.
But we need mercy, Prabhupada.
That is true. I've heard that. Bhaktisanta Saraswati Thakur said that a few purports back. He said it's only by Kripa Shakti that we can become pure devotees.
What did he say?
He said, yeah, by mercy. That's the point. Okay, so that's the answer to the fifth question. What was the fifth question?
What is the absolute truth? Is it Narayana? What is the absolute truth?
What is the true identity of Brahman?
Yeah, it's the question is, what is the true identity of Brahman? Spirit. Right? The answer is, if you read through, it is Bhagavan. It is Krishna. And Bhaktisanta Saraswati Thakur, you can says, you can also ask the question, how to develop perfect faith in the Supreme. That question is also answered. How to develop perfect faith in the Supreme.
What were the question and conclusion of this verse? Conclusion of this verse?
Worship Krishna.
This one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so now the sixth question is in the next verse. What is question six? Question six is, what are the three types of karma? So what are they? Three types of karma.
Karma.
In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says karma, vikarma, and akarma. But in this list, it's actually different. Right. It is karma, nishkarma, right, and bhakti. Because karma means action, activity. So you can do work with attachment, you can do work with detachment, or you can do work as an offering to Krishna. So which one should we do?
Bhakti.
Yeah, bhakti. We should do work as an offering to Krishna. But all three will be described. King Nimi said, O great sages, please speak to us about the process of karma yoga. Purified by this process of dedicating one's practical work to the Supreme, a person can very quickly free himself from all material activities, even in this life, and thus enjoy pure life on the transcendental platform. Once in the past, in the presence of my father, Maharaj Ikshvaku, I placed a similar question before four great sages who were sons of Lord Brahma. But they did not answer my question. Please explain the reason for this. Sri Avirhotra replied, prescribed duties, non-performance of such duties and forbidden activities are topics one can properly understand through authorized study of the Vedic literature. This difficult subject matter can never be understood by mundane speculation. The authorized Vedic literature is the sound incarnation of the personality of Godhead himself, and thus Vedic knowledge is perfect. Even the greatest learned scholars are bewildered in their attempts to understand the science of action if they neglect the authority of Vedic knowledge. So if you read in that verse, it describes akarma, vikarma, and karma. The three are mentioned, just as Krishna mentions in the Bhagavad Gita. Childish and foolish people are attached to materialistic fruitive activities, although the actual goal of life is to become free from such activities. Therefore, the Vedic injunctions indirectly lead one to the path of ultimate liberation by first prescribing fruitive religious activities, just as a father promises his child candy so that the child will take his medicine. So the Vedas, a large section of the Vedas is called Karma Kanda. Right, very large portion of the Vedas. So that portion of the Vedas speaks about fruitive activity, right? Doing activity, but desiring something in return. You worship demigods, right? And then why do you worship the demigods? So that you get wealth, so that you get a beautiful wife, so that you get male children or good children. So there is motivation in the activity. Right. But still, what is the purifying element? You approach authority and you follow Vedic instructions. That purifies the consciousness. So as it says here, it's not pure devotional service, but it gradually elevates the living entity. One devotee asked Prabhupada, is it better to be a Christian or someone who follows the Karma Kanda section of the Vedas, worships demigods? Prabhupada said, better to follow the Vedas. That will purify you more, right, on one level. So. If an ignorant person who has not conquered the material senses does not adhere to the Vedic injunctions, certainly he will engage in sinful and irreligious activities. Thus his reward will be repeated birth and death.
But he said that large part of the Vedic knowledge is sort of karma kanda. Then how can they improve? Even if they
improve because they have authority in something supreme. If they meet devotees, devotees will explain the demigods are not supreme. Vishnu is supreme. Right, and then by that association, they will become elevated. By executing without attachment the regulated activities prescribed in the Vedas, offering the results of such work to the Supreme Lord, one attains the perfection of freedom from the bondage of material work. The material fruitive results offered in the revealed scriptures are not the actual goal of Vedic knowledge, but are meant for stimulating the interest of the performer. So as you perform karma yoga, right? You're doing activities, but still you're attached. It's called sakama, karma yoga, right? You do activities, but you want something in return. You're attached, right? Then gradually by doing that, you will gradually become detached, right? So you're doing the activity, but it becomes nishkam, which means you become detached from the work. You're more concerned with just offering it and become more selfless. And that is a further qualification to perform bhakti.
Can we give an example? Like a young fellow, he has got a very beautiful girlfriend and he's working very hard to please her.
And what's the point?
That means that his incentive, his motivation is because to please, instead of pleasing Lord, he wants to please the girl.
So what's the point?
Our motivation should be to serve Krishna. Under all circumstances, whatever we have got, whatever resources we have got, we have to serve Krishna.
Don't serve your girlfriend.
For perfection.
Serve Krishna. Okay.
Serve along with the girlfriend Krishna.
No. Krishna in the center.
Yeah, there's a problem with that, Chandrasekhar. Sri Krishna. Okay. Yeah. Okay, so the last verse for tonight. One who desires to quickly cut the knot of false ego, which binds the spirit soul, should worship the Supreme Lord Keshava by the regulations found in the Vedic literatures, such as the tantras. So the follow the Vedic literatures in the Vaishnav Tantra. What is the Vaishnav Tantra? Narada Bhakti Sutra. Pancharatrika Pradeep. It means the portion of the Vedas which describes how Vaishnavas should worship the deity. By doing that, you will become purified and you'll develop bhakti, pure devotion. So that's what we're aiming for. We have to learn how to serve the deity, right? If you read the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the Nectar of Devotion, Rupa Goswami gives in chapter 6, he gives 64 ways to serve Krishna. Now, if you analyze that list, most of the list is in relation to deity worship. Right? Most of the items of bhakti are in relation to serving the deity. So by learning to serve the deity properly, that will detach you from the material world and that will stimulate your bhakti. Now, that's why deity worship is so important. That's why tomorrow we'll all begin in the morning, we'll begin to offer the deep to the deity. Right? That is purifying. I was reading last week about the purifying effects of just offering a deepa. Right? It's incredible the amount of benefit you get if you offer that. We offer the candles, but actually you're meant to offer ghee. You know, ghee deepa, like that. So if you can make that at home, you can bring it. You'll still get benefit from offering the candle. Krishna accepts the bhakti, that's the main thing. But the actual system is you offer the deepa. And you actually put a stick of tulsi within the deep, and then you offer and you get even thousands of times more benefit. Yeah.
Some people offer chandan also with tulsi.
Chandan?
Yeah. I saw one South Indian fellow. I was in Germany, and he was very rigorously, meticulously making the chandan paste. And then he was
in the lamp.
In Heidelberg.
So the basic principle is that we have to do deity worship. That's how it qualifies us. So tomorrow night we'll finish the chapter 3, and then that'll be the final class for this year. And then next February, by Krishna's mercy, we'll continue Canto 11. So get your fees up to date, either tonight or tomorrow, and then tomorrow night will be the last class. Karthik starts tomorrow. If you haven't started yet, start tomorrow. So absorb yourselves, pray for me that I can get blessings this Kartik and for my trip to the Holy Dham, and I pray for all of you that you have a very fruitful Kartik. May Srimati Radharani bless you all. Srila Prabhupada ki.